Good morning, everybody. So it's time for our morning date, our date morning. And I have a really, really, really great topic I want to talk about today that I'm super passionate about. And it came about because of the meeting with the media company.
Oh, yeah.
That's where it really came from. So we're going to let people get settled in. Chris, if you want to do your thing too, you know, this is our morning date. Me and Chris do a morning date almost every day. We're on earlier this week, I think on Monday, we were on 500 and our 580th morning date. Yes, I count them in my calendar. And for those that don't know what we do or what this is, we just simply talk to you guys like we talk on our morning date. We talk about business, we talk about life, family, sex, like you name it. We talk about it here, health, food.
Nothing is off the table, basically.
Nothing is off the table. And you just bring your questions, what you want to ask us, something personal, business, kids, and you bring us those questions and we just talk. It's not filtered, except for, my language sometimes is filtered because we're live. But it's not filtered. It's not scripts. It's just who we are. And we love doing this. This has changed our life. But my topic today is I'm not calling out these people by name, but I put Alex Hormozi in here on purpose. But I'm calling out those that compare themselves to the Alex Hormozis of the world, or like the Tommy Mellos of the world, if you're in home service. And I don't think it's fair that you're comparing yourself to these people. I think they have great information. I think great, like, I love reading some of their stuff. But what I want to point out is, I also think that there's different advantages if you have kids and if you don't have kids. So I really want to lean into this topic and lean into, what are we doing when we compare ourselves?
And queuing that up real quick, even though I think the topic was kind of geared towards, you know, a lot of these big influential people who are making motions. But the comparison of kids versus no kids, and I think that's what we'll get into, it applies to different ways, and just kind of like what you're looking at compared to what we're looking at.
Yeah. Or so the whole point of this topic is that, like, when we compare ourselves, we're comparing like our chapter to their book, right? And we don't know what their book is. Like, we don't know the chapters in their book. And so the reason I said this with parents is because I've been getting a lot of people that I've been coaching and talking to. And it came up with the media company about, like, who do you resonate with? Who is someone that would follow you? And we talked about, like, kids or couples in business or people struggling in business, the chaos of having your spouse or partner in a business or kids that you have to deal with still. And you're still trying to deal with employees. And that's how it kind of came up. And we were talking about it. And, you know, I was watching an Alex Hormozi video and the guy was like, I put noise canceling, like earplugs in, headphones, head down and work. And I thought to myself, oh my God, I can't do that. Like, I can't do that because as a parent, I am so fearful that I'm going to miss a call from my son or my daughter or something's going to happen, an accident, because it happened to me.
Yeah.
It happened to me. And, you know, so I think some of the advice that we hear isn't realistic to where we're at in that moment. And then what we do is we self-defeat, we compare, we get all in our feelings and emotional, we get down, and then we start to get in this rut. And, you know, the story about, you know, that I saw that Alex Hormozi video and I was like, man, I wish I could do that. And then it makes me all get like in my head, I would get more done if I could do that. But I'm like, not really.
or even worse is you jump in too quick to a concept or a movement or a thing, but you haven't primed yourself personally.
Or my family.
Or your family. Like or,
saying,
yeah.
Hey, I'm going to put headphones on for the next 6 hours. I won't be available. Right? Because that's priming your family or your spouse. And, you know, for me, the story was I was in a Zoom meeting, just like a regular weekly level 10 meetings. We all know what they are. And my 26-year-old called me and I didn't answer the phone. I saw him call me and I didn't answer the phone. I was like, oh, I'm in a meeting. I can't answer it right now. I'll call him later. And after that meeting, you know, I called him later and he didn't answer and we couldn't get a hold of him. And so it turned out it was an emergency. And when I see those things like the two headphones, noise canceling, earplugs. I think to myself, you know, that's not an option for me.
Yeah.
But so what is, like Chris said, then what is? And we need to stop looking at it literally and comparing ourselves in a literal sense versus taking the idea of what could I do.
Yeah. And what I meant by priming also was more on the larger scale of the concept of not starting from zero. These people who are making motions, there's certain things in their life that they've teed up already in terms of knowledge, insights, preparation, things that you don't see. Again, on the iceberg, it's what's underneath the water that they've already prepped and primed for certain things. I think you made a good example is jumping too soon into, let's say, hiring somebody to do something. I think this goes in with one layer deep in terms of priming the outcome or priming for success, is that jumping in too soon, you don't know all the preparation that somebody's done before to make sure that it goes off without a hitch. And so when somebody else dives in and they're like, oh my God, this was a train wreck, this was horrible. You got to look at it into the right lens is what were the things that weren't addressed or weren't said or weren't explained?
All the achievers forged their own path. And that is exactly true. And, you know, I don't think that, you know, with the forging your own path, with every success comes a bit of like pain or sacrifice. Did you sacrifice money? Did you sacrifice time? Did you sacrifice like your health? I was just coaching somebody the other day and she's like, I cannot get my health in line. I just can't. And my question was very simple. And it's why? Tell me why, like what, why? And, but you know, so it's either pain, money, time, struggle. And, sometimes we're not willing to do that. Like sometimes we're not willing to forge it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to lie. I've been pretty open about, sometimes I get a little, not aggravated, but I get a little bit upset with myself because, and this was prior to me kind of changing my mindset, was I always thought that the kids were slowing me down. Like, I'm just going to be completely transparent. I thought the kids were slowing me down. You know, I had just had Yaya. I launched my cleaning business during that time. And, you know, I thought, I was like, oh my gosh, if, you know, I didn't have the baby, if I had a sitter, like if I had more help, like if I wasn't so tied down, and that it was slowing me down. But I also think there are advantages to having kids in business, right? And we forge our own path. But I just know that I was looking at it wrong. I wasn't looking at it honestly in the right way. It wasn't slowing me down. It was a different path to get there.
Mm-hmm. And that different path, I probably guarantee you, has different meaning. I personally have my own struggles and gripes with the idea of comparison, and it frustrates me to no end. When you have an imbalance, let's say, of a marital relationship with kids, typically you have a husband-wife with children, but you see these disparities of like widely successful or hugely successful, but you don't understand that like it's because one has chosen, you know, the path of like working deeply. Usually it's like the man who's exclusively working and building and has no barriers, nothing holding them back. And then the wife or the mother is usually taking care of the kids. And then you think to yourself like, oh my gosh, like they're making so much movement. But when you look at it, it's like, well, they're not taking care of the kids through the entire day. Like everything's taken care of. And it's like they have free reign over what they choose to do for work or hobbies. And I get frustrated because I know that for me, I place a lot of value on family.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gets to me because I want that balance. I want to be invested in the kids, and it's a different path. And so I know now that I am not comparing myself to somebody who has free reign that isn't as invested with their kids as I want to be.
Yeah. So, you know, this topic has everything to do with like, say, if you have kids or if you have a spouse, or here's the other problem. If you have responsibilities that they don't have. So like no one thinks about that, responsibilities that they don't have, which means they're in a different place in their business than you are. Like maybe you still have to go to the office. Maybe you're still in the field versus some of these people that were self-defeating. It's not their fault. I'm not saying that any of them are wrong. I'm saying when we compare ourselves to that book versus our chapter, we have other responsibilities, whether those responsibilities are kids, employees. Like most of us are still dealing with employee issues. Like, come on. Yesterday we had an employee issue and organize it. And it, poor Lisa, it was my mom's birthday and she's the office manager and HR person. And she was like, this is just what I wanted to do on my birthday. And it wasn't a great day. It was not a great day. I told Chris, I'm like, oh my God, like, I need to get out of the house. Can we leave? Can we go somewhere? It wasn't a great day. We lost one of our longtime employees. And it didn't go down very well. We thought we were doing something. We wanted to go ahead and just give them a severance and let them have the rest of the time off and pay them. And, it didn't go down very well. And so it created a lot of chaos in the office and some issues, and we didn't really expect that. You know, so we have other responsibilities and other things. I did a call yesterday. And I mean, I was flattered during the call, but at the same time, I almost felt bad because they were like, I want these things. I want that. I saw you take your kids to New Orleans. That's what I want. And she goes, I feel so bad. Like she was beating herself up inside. Like, and I was like, no, like, stop comparing yourself to where I'm at right now. Let's work on where you're at and we can get there together. And so I think sometimes, especially with social media and how like fast information is moving and how much access we have to these major influencers, it can make us feel like crap sometimes. Like, just to be honest, it can make you feel like crap. I told Chris the other day, you know, Billy and Austin's dad has passed away. So we don't have help with kids well, Billy's a grown person, with Austin on that side as childcare. And then, you know, with Yaya, Chris's parents have passed away and my parents moved all the way across the country. Why'd they have to go off and move? They were so selfish. I'm joking. But so we don't have help with kids at all anymore. And I see people like go and like go pick up and travel like on their own. And I'm like, Chris, I just want to go with me and you, but we don't have any babysitters. And I was like, I'm jealous. I want that. And so we all want something. We all see it. I'm like, I want to go to Italy without our kids. And then like, but it's so much work to do it. And, you know, I was beating myself up inside and I'm like, stop. Like I could make it work if I wanted to, but we all still do it at some level. And so it's not just comparing ourselves if you have kids or you don't have kids. It's other responsibilities. It's, are you still in the day to day? Are you still dealing with employees? Like, we have different levels of things that we have to like check in and be there for when we're comparing to, like, you know, I love Dan and we can go to Buy Back Your Time. And, you know, in working with the media company that we hired for the book, they were like, how do you compare your book to Buy Back Your Time? Because we're using the same. They did the launch for it, or not the launch, but the media for it. I'm like, well, with mine, it's like, before you can buy back your time, you have to make sure you're not buying back inefficiencies. And so I, through this whole book process, you know, I was comparing myself to Dan because I'm using the same team. And I'm like, dude, I'm not Dan. I don't want to set myself up for like a huge disappointment because I don't know what I can do because I still have other responsibilities. So I can't do everything. I can emulate some things. But I, and so it goes across everything when, you know, what responsibilities are you still in, whether it's kids, working with your wife or your husband, like I said, day to day, it can be really self-defeating and that's not a great thing. So, you know, if you have lack of joy, it'll affect your heart. Lack of joy or happiness will affect your heart. And you can, that's why sometimes if you feel like your heart is skipping a beat, or you have heart issues, they say that it's because you have lack of joy inside, right? I'm not trying to sell you anything, but just buy my book.
Yeah, no, but
it's not even ready yet. I'm like, buy my book. It's only $20. I'll give you the $20 to buy my book.
Yeah, no, but everything in life is a sale, regardless if we want to admit it or not. I know I talk about this a lot, but you know, the idea of there's power and influence and the 48 laws of power and the idea that everything in life,
don't outshine the master, baby. Don't outshine the master.
Everything in life
one
is based on how you can influence others or influence a situation to your favor, whatever that might be, just in public perception of like where somebody's at and what they're choosing to show versus not, because it positions them in a better way or better light. So that they can then, yes, get more influence and kind of give you the pitch and whatever they're trying to sell you on, even if it's just sell you their friendship or something simple like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a good topic. It's comparison. I also think it's motivating though. Like, let's not get this wrong. Let's go to the other side. I've been in some rooms for the last few years that, holy crap, like you know, I was scared when I stepped in the room for the first time when I got into boardroom. It was male dominated. Like, I think there was one girl in there. That was it. And one other, and we got in at the exact same time. And, you know, it's you look in this room and you compare yourself and you're like, and to say that no one compares yourself to anyone is a lie. Like, let's just say that it never happens. Whether it's like looking at a magazine, you're like, ooh, she's sexy. Like, she's pretty. I want to look like her. Or comparing yourself to your parents or your siblings or like mentors that we follow. It happens. I still compare myself to certain things because I'm trying to achieve certain things. And that's why we have like vision boards and we're visual. You're looking at it to get to a goal, but there's also things to compare yourself against. So I think there's the positive side to it. And it's like, you know, it can be self-motivating and it can make you move so much faster than you ever knew you could. So it's like finding that balance to say, hey, I'm not setting myself up to fail. I'm not self-sabotaging. I'm not chipping away at that. Because then you wake up one day and you wonder why you're in a rut. Like, you wonder why, is the person I'm following motivating me or depleting me?
Yeah.
And I've had that realization over the last year and stopped following certain people because it was kind of making me feel bad about myself versus being in a room or following people who truly motivate you versus kind of that depleting feeling. And the person doesn't know that. Like, the high achievers don't know that they're depleting you, right? It's different for everybody.
It's what we choose to focus on.
Yeah. So Jerry says he respects the ones that are willing to be vulnerable and honest about the struggles. Let's talk about our struggles, Chris. We are in a season of implementation, and oh my God, are we tired? We're like, to just be honest, it's we have three businesses, four actually. We're launching the book. We have Woot Recruit, we have Sell Convert Clean, I have Organize It, and oh my God, is this a lot of work? But it was, the struggle for me was before January. Before January, I hadn't sat down. I had wrote a vision and I had wrote things out, but they weren't cohesive. They weren't like, they didn't work together. And then once I sat down and wrote them, and then how did my family incorporate? And we already did the family stuff prior, but each individual company was running like as a silo. And then once I sat down and really wrote a mission about like, why do I have all of these things and what am I doing and what's the goal? All of a sudden we saw a change, even in our employees, like
complete
change in like all the employees. They're helping, they're crossing. We're sharing resources and assets and playbooks. And it's become really interesting to see this, like an ecosystem grow and evolve for the cleaning industry. And we have our own little like ecosystem now of, we have like a whole tech team that supports all the companies, a whole marketing team that supports all the companies, and a whole finance team that supports all the companies, because I had them all individually. And oh my God, Jeremy, me and Chris were going to die of like stress. And it was just a crapshoot and stuff. Like, we were organized and we had playbooks, but it was just overwhelming. And that was in, when we did the 100 hours, and
yeah,
it was January. No, it was December. Well, we did 3 weeks of 100-hour weeks. And that's when we got clarity. And if we wouldn't have done that and put those 100 hours in for, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks in a row. It was in January. Mm-hmm. It was the week right after Christmas into New Year's, and then the 2 weeks prior. Because when we went to CBF Live, not Live, CBF Pro Trip, and yeah, is when it, in Tampa, that's when it ended. That was the 17th of January.
Yeah.
It freaking sucked. But if we wouldn't have put in those 100 hours for about 3 weeks straight, we wouldn't have been able to get our heads out of water, above water. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So here's the deal, is we talked about two things. One is, don't compare yourself to another person's book. Your chapter is somebody else's book. Keep that in mind with what we're talking about right now, honestly. If we wouldn't have said that we spent and took 100 hour weeks and put that in, keep in mind that we got kids. So,
we don't even know if the kids ate during those 100 hours.
Again, there's the concept that there is an equivalent exchange in everything in life. So the same concept is focus on business, focus on kids. So there's a season of focus.
Yeah, I'm laughing because we like I, you know, there were times I woke up and I'm like, I'm not even going to shower, Chris. I just need to get this done.
I don't know how many times I repeated the phrase, do what you think is right. And we made it through. But that's the whole deal here is number one is it was the season of focus. We all of a sudden came out with this platter of, you know,
yeah,
whatever. But we put in the work and there were sacrifices. And so it's just a matter of what you're willing to sacrifice. And do you know your own threshold of risk that you're willing to take? If not, then you prepare yourself to what we did.
Yeah, no, I think with that, you'll learn things about yourself. So like if you want to achieve some of these things that higher achievers achieve and the higher achievers achieve, there are sacrifices and you can do it. It's like interval exercising. You push yourself to like the limit, and we broke. I'm not gonna lie. Those 100 hours for 3 weeks straight, we actually went past breaking, and we saw it and we said, oh my God, we need to reset. But we couldn't reset. We couldn't reset here in the house because it's too associated to the work. And so we're like, oh my gosh, what do we do? How do we reset? What's that reset? And so we actually went to the Virgin Islands with a friend. And we used that. So we worked a little bit extra past burnout, which was, I'll be honest, we weren't that efficient and it wasn't that great. We were trying to tidy up some things. And then the reset came back and it was great. Like for 2 days, no phone, no anything, sitting on the beach, eating steak and lobster for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah, I think I was so relaxed that on the beach because of the way that the sun was setting is that I had a tan on this side of my body.
But that's the reset. And so then you come back and you're like, all right, you come back different. I always tell everybody, these high achievers, these people that do things, they work hard. They work to the point of breaking. But typically we don't know when we break. We don't listen to our bodies and our minds. But if you're in tune, you can push to breaking. And instead of getting overwhelmed, you get excited because you feel the breakthrough coming. You feel some momentum growing and building. I told Chris, I said, I feel it. It's going to be huge. And I know it. I can feel it. I can't see it because I can't envision it.
Yeah. And with delirium comes pure intention. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the power comes in, is that when you push yourself to the state of exhaustion. And now you've done mental exercises with this as well, Reiki, breathing, other things like that. But it's the concept that delirium, being in a state of delirium, actually gets you closest to the purest state of intention in whatever you're doing. So these 100-hour, or let's just say 300-hour
in three weeks,
really pushed us to that state of delirium of pure intention. And that's when things really start to, you have this, I'm trying to figure out the best way to show it, but you have this teeter totter of progress. And at first you have progress because you're working on something. And then all of a sudden you start to tank because you're becoming exhausted. And then once you hit that state of delirium, all of a sudden your productivity just peaks, but you can't live there for long. It's like running your engine in red. It's going to be, you know, powerful, but you got to get out of there quick.
Oh, I stopped drinking during those 3 weeks too. Wine. Like, let's just, I stopped drinking any alcohol, but I stopped drinking wine during those 3 weeks. For intentional, it was intentional. It was on purpose. I wanted to be in the highest state of focus and flow as possible. I have never gotten so much done in my life. Like to get it all like nailed and intentional in every decision. And like we actually broke down and rebuilt a lot of the internal things of our companies during those 3 weeks. And it was an amazing experience, I have to say. But what I see a lot of business owners do, and this was us as well, is you don't recognize burnout. You don't recognize it. You're just overwhelmed and you think that that's what it's supposed to be. Like you just think, I own a business, it's supposed to suck, right? And that's not true. It's just that we don't know how to recognize burnout. We don't know how to unplug. We don't know how to step away. And then what we don't know how to do either is I didn't know how to come back. So like when I would hit burnout, I'm like, oh my God, I need a day off. Oh my gosh, I need to unplug. But and I always use this in my coaching with people. It's like, when you come back different. Do not come back the same, or you're going to be doing the same crap over and over and over. Come back different. If they could handle it for 2 days, then they can handle it for 2 weeks. When you come back different. Don't just jump right back in. Assess what was broken. Assess what didn't work. Work on that and let them keep doing it. Because if they can do it for 2 days, they can do it for 5 days. And if they can do it for 5 days, they can do it for 2 weeks.
And if you helped out during the days that you were gone, then you didn't actually get that reset. No. I just wanted to clarify that.
Then that is not a real reset, guys. And I think it's fear. It's fear of stepping out. It's fear of it burning down. I'm like, let it burn down. Let the shit burn. Let it burn. Who cares what's going to happen? Nothing's going to happen. Maybe. What's the worst thing? You get a bad review. Maybe one. Like, is it worth it? Maybe you lose a customer. I mean, it's not the end of the world. God, we lose customers every day. So it's fear that kind of holds us hostage to that. And that's why we hate our businesses. That's why we hate our businesses. And it's just a really interesting mindset. And we have to be more comfortable stepping away. We have to be more comfortable empowering and delegating. You know, with the one layer deep, the principle and the framework around it, it's like, are you delegating inefficiencies? What are you delegating?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're nervous about. We're not even confident in our process. We're not even confident in what we're delegating. Like, should it be delegated or should it not? I gave somebody one of our frameworks from in the book. Like, we're going to start dropping the frameworks. We're going to start like doing things. And one of my coaching clients, they were struggling with the office. They were extremely over budget with the office staff. He's like, Libby, I don't know like what to do. I don't know where to fix. I said, this is the first thing we're going to do. And so I gave him the framework, and there's several steps within the framework that you got to do. And he did it. And he's like, I said, when you do this, just give it to them. And say, give it to each person in the office. Say, you have to do this for 5 days. And it's a time audit, and we have a whole sheet on it. And so they do it for 5 days. And I said, don't say anything. Don't look at, you can look at it like on day one to make sure they're filling it out right, but don't say a word, don't micromanage, just let them fill it out and see like what it comes back with. And I said, you will be mortified. You will be like, oh my God, like you might as well just take money and throw it in an incinerator. We've done this. We do it every 6 months in the companies.
And it's only step one of three creates a breakthrough.
It's only step one, guys.
And here, yeah.
And after that, he's like, I said, okay, let's do the next step. He's like, no. Like, he's like, he fired two people instantly. And I said, well, wait, don't fire anybody. And he goes, no, like, because I said the process is broken, or the handoff it's too many handoffs. It's, you know, is it a teeter totter of information? Is it broken playbooks? Is it lack, like, are you not using the softwares efficiently? And he goes, no, it's like, I have to remake things. It's not their fault. This is happening. It's my fault. I delegated something that shouldn't have been delegated yet. And he's like, a $7 hour remote person is now costing me $21 an hour because of the inefficiency. And he had two of them that he fired. He kept the third one. And, you know, it's crazy that when we go to saying like, hey, I want to go on vacation, I want to step away. We don't even trust our own process. And so just auditing, like, what's happening. And I said, hey, there's two more steps left in this process. I know, I don't want to do them yet. Like, let me go work on the things I had delegated. He's like, it was a crapshoot. It was like all over the place. I made it too complicated. Let me go fix that first. And then we'll come back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for the long story and rant, and I think in business, we don't trust ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's yeah. Huge.
Sorry, yeah. Go ahead. No, it was another point to that with, the whole topic of delegating with, inefficiencies. I want to, with a grain of salt here, is the idea of comparing yourself to somebody else and what we did. Don't just jump at it and start to overhaul and go away for 3 weeks and just cram and then come back and try to flip things around in your business or your life. What you don't see is that in doing all this, we had already worked on alignment, on extreme clarity and transparency with every person that we intentionally primed and staged for this transition.
And so, we do it every 6 months.
Yeah. So I don't want to say that we just at the drop of a hat that all of a sudden we dove in and we saw all these things and we flipped it over to this brand new organization and everybody was 100% sold from the get-go without doing any work. We had to put in the intentional effort to keep everybody aligned, be fully transparent, and have pure intention so that when we made the delivery, people were already sold. Before a word even came out of our mouth, they were like, yes.
Yeah.
And I wanted to at least position that, because if somebody goes in and tries to do an overhaul of any process of doing these mm-hmm. practices, there's got to be priming that happens beforehand. Otherwise,
trust, safety, yeah. Psychological safety.
Right. But it's also, again, to Jeremy's point, is the sale. You got to sell them on the concept, on the idea before it's even needed. Because again, I know it's the fluffy, rah-rah.
It goes to vision.
Yeah.
That goes to vision. It goes to vision. How do you make your cleaners feel like they're doing more than just cleaning? And that's vision. It's vision. It's like your vision is so clear and so strong. It's you're purpose driven, right? There's a purpose project. That's Chris's term. It's a purpose project. You're so driven, and that it everything's bigger than what it is. And that's how you get them on board and start priming them, is the vision, the vision, the vision, right? Our vision within the Libby Dilution org, ecosystem, which houses Organize It in all their locations, Woot Recruit, Sell Convert Clean, and the 1LD, which is like the book entity, is our vision is to create an ecosystem to support the cleaning industry through tools and softwares and coaching. Like, that's my vision. And it was so like so specific and so like, and this is how Woot Recruit's going to do it. And this is how Sell Convert Clean's going to do it. And this is how Organize It's going to do it. And this is how the book is going to do it. And then when we put all them and they all had a purpose, then all of a sudden our leadership staff had excitement. And you don't have to have multiple companies to do this. Then all of a sudden there was pride in scrubbing a toilet. Right? There was pride in washing windows. It wasn't just the motion of washing the windows and scrubbing the toilet, but the vision is so important. It's so important. And as owners, we skip over that because we think, oh, I need another playbook. Oh, I need another process. Oh, I need another tool, or, oh, I need another software, which I think is not true.
And one more thing in delivering a vision and in getting buy-in, don't feel like you have to practice the what's in it for them mentality. Because I think that's where a lot of people get stuck, is in thinking that my vision has to include something that they're going to get excited about in a monetary sense, or in a tangible way mm-hmm. of saying like, oh, and you can also get a raise by doing this, this, or this. No, it's the vision. It's the concept. It's the bigger picture. It's if they're sold with you, then they're sold with the vision.
Your goals, your vision has to be so big that all of theirs fit into it. It doesn't have to be aligned with theirs. Is that all of everyone who works for you's goals have to fit inside your goals. If your goals are too small and they can't house them, then they have a hard time getting on board.
And it's alignment. Again,
alignment.
Alignment, transparency, intention. You're not changing your goal to fit theirs. You are creating the bigger picture of what your goals are. And again, thinking bigger. In terms of not specifically for one thing, but if they don't fit in there, in all honesty, in all genuine, you know, approach, then it's okay.
Yeah.
But as long as you have this pure intention of what your goal looks like, and it is big enough for the right people to stay inside of that, I think that is what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah. Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built Woot Recruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WootRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today. So to people out there that are saying like, well, I don't see myself as like a giant business owner. I don't see myself as like a $5 million company, or I don't see myself like you, Libby. Because I've had people say that to me, like, where you own multiple things. And I said, that's fine. But here's where my challenge is to you and everyone that's listening, is that we're all put on this earth for a purpose, for a purpose. This can be religious if you are into organized religion or if you believe in God. This can be spiritual. But we're all put on this earth for a purpose. And we're being too literal with our cleaning company, right? Our cleaning company, for like Tammy's case, you're here for a purpose. What is that purpose? And how does that cleaning company anchor to the or help you get to the purpose? Is it money, time, freedom? Is it associated to the cleaning? It may not even be associated, but your purpose needs to be shared, like your purpose. If you died tomorrow or today, and hopefully nobody does, if you died today, would you be happy with what you achieved? Did you achieve your purpose, why you were put on this earth? Did you achieve that purpose? And so that purpose is part of your vision, which is part of your company, no matter what company that is. And it can be associated to the company, or the company can help you get to the purpose. Like I said, by money, freedom, time, freedom, purpose, freedom. That goes in the vision. And that's what like your technicians can get on board with, because they're sold on you, not necessarily the actual job, but they're sold on you. I realized the other day that like a lot of our staff doesn't necessarily have my core values that I made for the company.
Which is contrary to typical, I'm going to say this right now, EOS typically says that they have to align, and everybody has to, it already has to be there in people that are currently in your company.
I disagree. The values, our core values of our company are me. They're me. They're what I embody. They're what I envision. A lot of our employees aren't me. They're not necessarily curious or, constantly learning. They're very, a lot of them are very quiet. Chris said to me, what did you say to me yesterday? You have a lot of introverts in your life. Wait, no. Passive. What'd you say to me?
I think it was passive people. I don't remember how I said it.
You have a lot of passive people around you. I'm like, I don't know why. He's like, Did I hire them? Like,
I know I hired two at least.
I'm like, huh, they're very passive. No, they get things done, but they're just very passive. And so I noticed in auditing, because me and Chris are working on, for all my cleaning business owners out there, we're working on, I hate the word assessment, but it's going to be a AI assessment for residential cleaning technicians. Like first residential cleaning assessment ever. And so we're going down, like I was looking at more my core values. I'm asking some other cleaning business owners for insight. And I looked at Chris, and I was like, none of our technicians have any of these core values. And they've been with, we don't have a turnover problem. We have had like amazing retention for the last year. And then like most of my techs have been with us like 3 years, but they're not anything to do with my core values. They are sold on us. They are sold on the company, and they're sold on the mission, and they're sold on me.
Yeah. So, and I think there's some magic to that, is the whole stigma of they have to fit your core values right now is a little bit, I don't think it's true. I think there's a half truth. And it's that if you can, half of that is you influencing or being a center of influence to kind of inject those core values over time with the greater purpose, with the greater vision. I think that's really what it means.
So I love this word influence. It's part, I have a section in my coaching program around influence and negotiation. I think people suck at this. I sucked at it for years. The negotiation part, I didn't have the confidence. I think men are better naturally because they are naturally raised and bred with more confidence. Women tend to suck, or at least I sucked at negotiation, like negotiating salaries and raises and like buying something and a car. And like, I'm great at it. Chris is like, ooh, I'm watching you. And you're like, why did you say that? Did they add? And I'm like, no, I'm setting it up. Be quiet. in negotiation. But let's talk about influence. Some of the most amazing leaders who can keep people, have great retention, are great influencers. Like, they
influential people.
I'm not talking about social media influence. Like we're not talking TikTok influencers, guys. Like, put that to the side. They're influential. Like, they're just like, people just follow and listen to them and hang on every word. And they know how to communicate their vision, their expectation, and the end result. Like, And these are people that you see build. I have coached companies that were 10 times larger than me because they like, I don't have a playbook. And they're like, we're $10 million. And I'm like, oh my God, you don't have one process or you don't know your numbers. And you guys made it to like 10 million. And I'm over here going like, and here I am like, let me make a process for everything. And, but what I've met is these people have the ability to influence. It is so amazing at how they can communicate and share like vision and transparency. And anyone will do anything for them, like anything. And everyone wants to work for them.
And you know what that is? The power of influence is it's creating allies. Creating apostles for your company. People who will be those champions that will not stop at shouting from the rooftops about whatever it is you're doing, or watch every single video, because I'm pretty sure that at some point we're probably going to have one of our own, a couple of our staff jump in.
Oh, our staff's on here. This is public.
Yeah.
Sometimes Willie's on here. Sometimes Eliani's on here. Sometimes Lisa's on here.
And Maria.
Yeah. I'm like, this is public. We don't hide anything from anybody. Go ahead. Sorry.
But it's creating apostles for your company. The power to influence will create apostles for your company. It's people who will go with you anywhere to help you with the goal, even if it doesn't directly benefit them, but they're so sold on you that they're sold on your vision.
A great example of this, guys. We launched Sell Convert Clean. And we have different departments. When we did the org restructure, we took tech and marketing and sales and finance out of all the companies, and we've made our own tech team, our own marketing team, and our own finance and HR team that support all companies. And so what we saw with this is it's really interesting. Like, hey, we need someone from one of the companies to go help in another company. And they're like, sure. Yeah. Like, oh yeah. Like, no problem. Let me help. And before we really had that vision, anytime I would ask somebody for something, it was like, that's not my job. And then I was like, holy crap. Like, okay. Well, I mean, you're still getting paid. What's the matter? But that was the response I used to get. Oh, that's not my job. No, I don't want to. I'm like, I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. Over the last, I would say 2 years, no, probably like the last year, as I started to add more things, that has changed. They're like, hey, how can I help? Like the whole WooRecruit team is like, can we be on the book launch team? We want to help you launch the book. What can we do? And I'm like, sure. I don't know yet.
It's a new level of excitement.
I'm like, I don't know. I don't know yet. But when I figure it out, you can help. And I don't expect them to work for free, but they didn't even ask me, are you going to pay me for this? They were just like, we want to help. And that's like next level influence. And leadership is influence. And I agree, Tammy. I have been working on, I have a great coach, Coach Cavani, that actually,
not Cavani, but Caviani.
Caviani, sorry. Caviani, and which I'm fixing to hand off, and he's going to coach Chris, because it's time for me to move on. And we worked on over the last year and a half levels of leadership. And, you know, he's like, I've seen Libby 1.0, I've seen Libby 2.0, and you are currently in Libby 3.0. And I just thought that was really interesting because no one had ever really said 1.0. We see that in software, and we see that with like books that come out like 2.0. I think Beth just put out like Deep Cleaning Specialist 2.0. And I've never really heard anybody address like Libby 2.0, like Libby 3.0. And he's like, you're now in 2.0 or 3.0. He's like, you've reached next level. And I was like, whoa, I have. And but someone had to tell me that. And I think for us, we just think we're the same. It's that imposter syndrome. Is it, am I really better? Am I really influential? Am I really a great leader? It's hard to measure. But until you believe it, you're not like you haven't got to 2.0 yet. Because first, I had to have someone tell me it for me to even believe it. I just was going through the motions, and it's like, there's no way to really measure it. So I think also if you don't believe it or see it or point it out and take that moment to say, oh my gosh, this is next level. I've reached next level. Then if you're not doing that, you can't actually get to the next level.
Yeah. The idea of the concept here is with the power of influence. Influence is leadership. Great influence is great leadership. But the power to influence people will determine how far you can go. But in order to unlock that, you need the power to influence yourself. And that's what Libby teed off, is the idea that if we're still so insecure about ourselves and about opening up to the idea that we are better than we think we are, you'll stay stuck if you don't open that up. You got to influence yourself first.
So I think men, though, let's get into the men-woman thing. Women, for all the girls on here and all the guys, I'd like some input. I think for women, this is really hard. This is really hard. I have struggled with this for years. And I've always been, except for in residential cleaning, I've always been in male-dominated groups or industries. I owned a bar. It's very male-dominated. My prior career with the elephants, if you don't know what that is, ask me later. It was male-dominated. I was the first woman to do the job that I did for Feld Entertainment and Ringling that they ever had. And very male dominated. Got into residential cleaning, it's very female dominated. And then in software, it's very male dominated again. And I think what Chris said, if you don't believe it in yourself and you can't influence yourself, you're going to be stuck. But here's where I think with women and men is men have an easier time at this because they're naturally more confident than women. It's a man, like you're supposed to be the man of the house, like you are the breadwinner, like they're the primary this, they take care of like women. And I'm not getting into like anything like that because I'm a girl and treat me like one, buy me flowers and call me pretty. But when it comes to like how we're made, our chemical makeup is what I'm talking about. It's like, I feel like women struggle with this so much more than men with the confidence to say I've reached the next level without like actually believing it. Where men, I see they have that more confidence when they walk in a strange room, or they're more confident, like even in negotiating and in delivering information or in communicating. And I think women naturally inherently have a harder time.
Can I give my thoughts on why I think that is?
Yeah.
I do think that naturally, because there's some psychological or some biological things that that women have that men don't. But one is empathy. A close perception, yeah, of emotion. Mm-hmm. And you're more perceptive to emotion. That being said as well is, you know, with audio, there is women have a higher register of higher frequencies in their hearing. So babies crying, women are more attuned to hearing a baby's cry.
Is that why you never heard Yaya cry?
Exactly. But no, I'm that's
serious.
No,
he's serious. He's serious. Yeah.
Is there are certain biological functions that are different in women. And one of them is perception. And that being said, is I think also with the society as we have it right now, is that women have this knack or this sense of connecting or feeling
nurturing,
where you have this thing that's dependent on you. You have these responsibilities that are dependent on you. And so if you have, let's say, the power of influence to influence yourself, then subconsciously, what you're saying is that you can rise up and leave everybody else down here. But the natural instinct for women is to stay here, to nurture, to care, and to make sure that everybody else is taken care of. So you have to stay at the same level as other people. And I think that's really, really difficult if you think about it, is instinct is to stay at the same pace as others so that you can stay there to nurture and care.
Yeah. And especially of kids, right? Because it's like, it's that nurturing side that we have, like what Chris is describing, especially if you have children. But I think for women, we have our advantages too. You know, those advantages are like men might have more confidence naturally, inherently, like chemically, and that can be worked on. Like I've worked on mine for years. I had to be confident. But where we have more empathy than men. So there's the trade-off, right? CEOs, companies, giant organizations spend millions of dollars training men on how to be more empathetic in these giant firms and businesses, because they like that. Where over here, we like, and I don't know if it's necessarily confidence, but it's something around that.
Anchoring to dependencies.
Yes.
Things that you feel you have to take care of or control.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's that motherly instinct we all have. So I've always been in very male dominated industries. And how do you come off so that you're taken seriously, you're direct, but you're not perceived as a, you know what, a BTICH, Right? Right? Because I always tell Chris, I'm like, oh my gosh, is that kind of snarky or is that kind of confident? Is that kind of like, I'm like, where's the line? I'm not sure. And I get it, because how do you be a confident woman and not, it's just like being a guy though. How do you be a really confident guy without being douchey? Right? There's that line. And it's the same thing, I think, for women. How do you be a really confident woman without being perceived as a, you know what? And so there's that line. And I think it's true, but it's funny because it is a struggle. And I think it's easier for us to get labeled, because, you know, my kids will call me a Karen, and I'm sorry, you know, not anymore, but back there, like, and I'm like, why am I a Karen?
That's the new 5-letter word.
Yeah. I'm like, why am I a Karen? And they're like, well, you drink wine and you shop at Costco's and you complain. I'm like, okay, well, I guess. And so, you know, it's hard. I think you get labeled a little bit faster sometimes. And where's that happy medium? And I think for me, honestly, the happy medium is if you deliver it with honesty and vulnerability, then you're not perceived that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a concept. It's called regression to the mean. And
Chris,
it's
smart. I've never heard of that, Chris. I'm like, where did that come from?
Just keep this in mind, because I think it's also where you have a much harder tendency to, I think it's regression of the mean, but it's basically as far out as you step out from what you consider the norm in society for a woman, it's harder to step out and stay out without pulling yourself back in. And I think that is what's keeping some people stuck, is that regression to the mean. It's pulling back into what you feel society requires of you. And so how do you break through that mindset to make sure that as you step out, you don't naturally pull yourself back in? How do you keep growing without feeling this anchor to society's norms?
I'm in deep thought, because I was thinking, how did I do it, for everyone who's listening? Because like when Dan first let me in boardroom, I was terrified. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? They're going to kick me out. I don't know anything about software. I mean, I didn't. I was pretty new. So to answer Chris's question, and I'm thinking through the process, because guys, I have let a lot of things go. Like, just to be frank and like totally open and honest, to achieve where I've gotten and where I'm going and where I want to be, I have had to let a lot of things go that society would label me as a bad mom. And how did I do that? As Chris was explaining it, so I can explain it to you guys. How did I let it go? I think the most powerful thing I did was to sit down and to really, and I'm not talking goals and I'm not talking revenue, to really work on the purpose, my purpose. What was I trying to achieve? Why am I working so much? Why does this matter? Why do I have Organizit or Woot Recruit or any of the companies? Why am I writing a book? And I think for me, when I sat down, because in 2025, I said a few things, and you guys might laugh at me. I'm not cooking, and I haven't cooked yet. I'm not cooking. And I feel like, God, and I told Chris, I said, I don't want to cook. It's like the biggest waste of time in my mind. I don't even want to eat, to be honest, because I could be doing something else. And for me to like say that out loud was one, I was like, oh my God. And I put it on my vision board. I'm like, are people going to judge me? Like, I don't want to cook. Like, it's to clean and to wash the dishes and to cook the food and to go grocery shopping is like, oh my God. It's just so much work. I'm like, I could be doing something else. Food is not that important to me. And so I haven't cooked and I'm not driving. I said, I don't want to drive in 2025. Granted, I have had to drive a little bit, but I sold my car. I don't have a car.
Achieved.
Done. And every once in a while I have to drive, but I want to drive. That's my downtime. While I'm in the car going somewhere to do something, I'm doing little tiny things to button up things so that then I can spend more time with the kids, or I can have a great dinner and not have to be on the phone. So it's like, where can I use and maximize my time? But in society standard would say, well, like, you suck as a mom. Why aren't you cooking your kids dinner? Or why can't you drive your kids to soccer practice? And then I'm not cleaning the house. I'm not doing certain things. We have the house cleaner. What else? There was a few other things. Oh, and I don't deal with Yaya and the Girl Scouts. I just said I can't. I gave years of my life to Billy and Austin and their sports and their extracurriculars. I'm in the season where I don't want to be involved. I need to focus. And, you know, we worked it out. We said that was okay. But like with Chris back, what'd you call it? Your anchors, or wait, to the mean?
Regression to the mean.
In society standards, I would be looked at as like a horrible mom. I'm not involved and I don't want to be in like the Girl Scouts. And it's nothing against the Girl Scouts. It's I don't want to do it. I don't want to cook. I don't want to wash the dishes. I don't want to drive the car. But for me, it was sitting down and saying, okay, what is the purpose? And figuring out the actual purpose, the third mountain, where are we going? Why is it so important? And what's it going to do for my kids and my family? And once when we saw that the purpose was bigger than cooking dinner, then that now became, it was okay for me to let that go. It was okay for me to not drive. It was okay for me to say, hey, I don't want to be involved in the Girl Scouts. I'm good. I need to focus. And it didn't make me feel bad. Because as a mom, and as even as a dad, like if you said, I'm not going to do those things, you'd feel bad. You'd feel guilty. And I did for years, and I still did them, and I hated them. And then I did the same thing with groups. Like sometimes we're too attached and too involved with certain things or certain people. And I said, how do I let them go? How do I justify it to myself? Not to anybody else. Like, let's just make that straight, because you can't feel guilty. You can't have shame, or it's going to tie you back. It's going to anchor you back, and you can't freely be like free to then next level, next level, next level. And it was by getting that vision so clear. And again, it's not revenue. It's not necessarily for the company. It's the vision for you and your family. And what is the goal? And then all of a sudden the kids were supporting the book. Austin works for, I don't even know who Austin works for. Also works for Libby, the book. No, he works for the marketing, social media. Billy works for Organize It. My mom works for Organize It. Chris works for Woot Recruit and Sell Convert Clean. And then all of a sudden there was this mission, and Yaya's like supporting the book. And she's like, Mom, we have to do this for the book. Mom, you forgot to do this for the book. Like, and there's all of a sudden this like excitement for everybody, not just me. And it allows next level to be easier. I hope that made sense.
So what you're saying is that you intentionally stepped away from the norm, because if you did not, you would actually be doing a disservice to everyone around you. Honestly, it was more selfish if you stayed, again, regression to the mean, if you stayed in that societal norm, you were doing a disservice to everybody else around you.
Well, yeah, because, you know, it's not just business. It's what are you, you know, it's how is this business going to change our family? So it goes to, for me, let's talk about this, right? It goes to generational wealth. Generational wealth. No, I'm not leaving them money. That's not what generational wealth is. It's like generational safety, not leaving them money. It's how do you create that legacy, that empire, that thing I never want to retire from? How's it going to help our kids? And it's not by giving them a company, and it's not by giving them money. It's by giving them tools, right? It's by giving them the tools to succeed in life. But it came down to like that generational wealth, and wealth is an abundance, right, of something. It's not necessarily abundance of money. It's abundance of things, of anything you want it to be. But for me, it was, how does this contribute to our kids? Like, how's this set you up? I'm older than Chris. And so I'm like, I have to like, you know, how does this set him up for success? Versus again, goes further than to just like, this is not just about scrubbing a toilet. It's so much more.
Yeah. And to your generational wealth, it's creating leverage for the next generation. It's creating leverage for other people to, not with money, but to take that next step for you.
So yeah, you step away from things, but you step away with intention. And then when you step away, it's handing it off. Then what do you do when you step away? So over the last, since January, we've been clearing my calendar. And then I look at my calendar, and I'm like, oh my God, I don't have anything to do. If you looked at my calendar at like in 2024, it was packed. It was like meetings and meetings and meetings. And now we look at it and I'm like, oh crap. Now I got to actually do something. And I'm like, you step away. And then, but now what do I do once you step away? And it's next level. It's different relationships. It's handing off like I'm handing stuff off to Chris. Marilyn is doing meetings on my behalf instead of me doing the meetings. She's doing some for me. And it's like, how do you keep stepping away? And it's, again, it goes back to vision. It's like, why are you doing this? Why is it important? Why should Marilyn care? Like, why should Chris care?
Yeah. And I think I have to look back, but I think it was one of our, either the first or the second date morning that we ever put out there and published. But I talked about really you owning your kingdom. Like, you have to take care of yourself and your kingdom before you can then step out, and you have this other ring of influence as you have those, the traditional, you know, kingdoms of these protected borders as you come out into more of the general areas, is that you have to take care of yourself first, before the next layer.
And that goes to health and mental health, physical health, mental health, food health. I don't know what you want to call it, like nutrition. Those are some of those layers. And so if you're feeling like a little less confident or a little down or a little insecure about the vision, or you don't have clarity on the vision. And this conversation started with like, don't self-sabotage by following people that aren't in the same place as you, right? I was just trying to be a little polarizing by putting Alex Hormozi's name in there.
Which we love, by the way.
I love him. Yeah. I'm like, dude, like, yeah, you're moving 100 miles an hour. I'm like, man, can I give you my 3 kids for a month? And I could probably move as fast as you. And so don't self-sabotage, because I find myself doing that sometimes still, guys. Come on, let's be real. You know, it goes back to, if you're feeling like you're not influencing, let me just tell you guys all right now, the fastest way, and we haven't talked about this, the fastest way to get your employees to influence your employees. Say, let's just say you don't have great leadership skills, you're working on them, you're really trying, and you don't know how to get people to follow you. You know what the fastest way is? The easiest, fastest way. Go on a health journey and share it with them. I shared my health journey with all the companies, and all of a sudden I didn't even try to, I was just sharing it. And all of a sudden everybody's walking, everybody's trying to lose weight, everybody wants to do a challenge, everybody's watching what they eat, everybody's doing the exercises that I shared online. And I didn't even share it with the company. I shared it on Facebook, and like Gabby from sales is like, oh yeah, I was doing your exercise routine. You shared it on Facebook. And Gabby's in sales. And that is like the fastest way to, one, build your confidence, is focus on your health, share it with your team, and they will automatically be influenced by you and start following suit automatically.
And you know why that is?
Because they crave the same thing, right?
I think there's another part to it.
Chris is smarter than me most of the time. So why is that, Chris?
Because of the fact that you took time to care for yourself and cared enough to change yourself, which is not common for a lot of people to be open enough to be willing to change yourself. And so I think that subconsciously is that they will see that you are willing to, one, change yourself and change your health.
We haven't talked about this, but this happened, what, like 2 years, 3 years ago? Well, it happened originally when I cut out carbs and sugar, which was like 3 years ago. We saw it and organized it. And then about 2 years ago, WooRecruit really started. They started doing walking challenges, and we started to have like health, and whoever won got like a paid day off. And then we did vision boards again, and everyone wanted more health. Everyone's like, man, Libby, I don't know how you don't eat carbs and sugar still. And it was like, all of a sudden I became an influencer within our company, and I didn't even know it. I didn't even try to do it. And I told Chris, I was like, this is weird. But if you start taking care of yourself, automatically you will influence people without even trying. And so it's actually even more genuine, because like maybe you said, because you care enough about yourself to do this, and people aspire to do that. They long for it. It's hard. So it's easy to do, like it's easy to get people to follow you by doing this, but doing it is hard.
Yeah.
And I think people long for that. And we all want better health. Everybody, like, it doesn't matter if you're already in shape. People want to be in shape. And I was just blown away by how I was influencing them, and I didn't even know it. And then one day I told Chris, I was like, this is crazy. Like, all of a sudden everybody's worried about health, and everybody's walking, and everybody's watching what they're eating, and everybody's exercising because of me. And I was like, wow. And I think that's where it really started with me turning into next level leader. And that started about 3 years ago. And so now here's the thing, guys. I can't let them down.
Show them that you're trying to become a better person.
But I can't let them down. Like, I've shared the journey. Now, I've had setbacks, but then I can't let them down. They're watching me. They're watching every step I do and everything I take and every like health journey and workout and like, and I don't want to let them down. So it's a next level accountability as a leader now too, that I have to maintain this and actually keep going. I can't see what Kathy wrote. I'm trying to see.
Yeah. So, by the way, it's great. Teresa McConnell, she said, I need your exercise routine. We'll drop that later because we've mentioned it a few times, but I think we need to have it. We'll make it a regimen. Let's call it that with our date morning and our flow and rhythm. But Kathy said, this is so true. I just started walking at lunch and always asked if anybody wants to join. And they used to always say no. Now we all go on a power walk every day together. Love it. They will deliberately block it out on the office calendar now.
Yeah, we did that and organize it back when we were in office. Now we're all remote. We made everybody go. Well, we blocked out everyone to go on a walk. It actually boosts productivity if you go outside and move your legs and get some sun. So they'll actually be more productive if you let them have like a 15-minute walk. I tried to force them to do it and they didn't do it when I tried to force them. And then when I started exercising and sharing it and then every morning and organize it, almost every morning, I share a picture of me on my morning walk, in the organize it chat, with the cleaning technicians and that I'm on my morning walk. And so like in the all staff chat, that's in our organize it chat with the cleaners, like I share pictures of me on my morning walk and it really encourages other people to do it, whether they want to or not. Like either they aspire to do it, so then they look up to you, or they do it, which then they look to you even more because that sense of feeling they get, as they associate it to you, inspiring them to do it. I think this is a great topic. I love this topic. You know, it's all about, we talked about like comparing yourself, but we're looking at these high achievers, these influencers, and how they influence us. This is all about influence, whether you're following Alex Hormozi or you're trying to be an influencer, right? A good leader.
Somebody who is influential.
Someone who's influential. And so my key takeaway here for everybody, because I want to go have my lunch.
I'm excited.
My key takeaway is to be a really good leader, an influencer, someone who's influential. There's a key components, but I think it's transparency. Because if you're not transparent, you're adding so many layers of complexity because you can't remember who you told what to and what you're keeping a secret or what you're hiding or what you're not sharing. It's transparency. It's being open and honest. It's sharing your journey publicly. Like when I do a post, I'll drop in like my Facebook profile post in like the organize it chat or in the Woo Recruit chat on my Facebook profile. So like if when I'm working in the lawn chair from Margaritaville, they all know I'm working from the lawn chair in Margaritaville. You know, sharing that openly. So, you know, it's being open, it's on being honest, it's being vulnerable. But the other thing that makes a really, really great person of influence that I'm working on still that I have not mastered is the ability to storytell. And I don't mean like tell a fake story. I mean, to share the story, like storytell. And this comes to like even saying like, hey, I want to work on a new marketing project, and the ability to be able to explain it, to storytell about what I want is still a struggle for me. So that's something I'm working on. You could call it communicating, but it's painting such a vivid vision, storytelling. People are drawn to the way you speak and communicate.
Yeah.
Yep. Anything else?
I think this is a great place to wrap it up.
Me too.
And my only takeaway here is I think if anything at all, if anything for you to start out with doing something, is being comfortable with the idea of being your own influencer or center of influence, because you got to make sure that you are sold and you are bought in with the idea of yourself, with the idea of who you're going to be. If that doesn't happen, nothing's going to happen.
I'll leave you with this question. Question is, who are you going to be? Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built WooRecruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WootRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today.